The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Be sure to check out our Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, Wolves Wired, on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Join our Wolves insider, Zach Bennett, as well as Tim Fakeless from the Sporting News and the Wolf Among Wolves, and I, as we offer our insights from inside the Minnesota Timberwolves locker room. For many great offerings on the Minnesota Timberwolves and other local sports teams, be sure to follow us on Twitter at ColdOmahaMN, like the Cold Omaha Facebook page, and visit ColdOmaha.com.
Hello and welcome to Procedurally Generated. I'm Henry Bell, and joining me in studio today are Tom Schreier and Brandon Bowling. Forgive me for the Radiolab voice this week. I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, but as always, the show must go on. We have a lot to talk about, so I want to get things started with Blizzard, who has announced a new Hearthstone expansion called Whispers of the Old Gods. This is coming off the back of their previous announcements, how they are going to be starting to phase out some of the old expansion packs to try and keep the game's meta a little bit more competitive and to make sure that they can properly balance cards. They are going to be adding 134 new cards, all of them themed around the old gods of Warcraft lore. Some of my favorite characters, actually, from the Warcraft series. The old gods are the nemesis. I'm not sure, of the Titans, the creators of Azeroth. So it should be quite interesting. They have basically said that it's going to kind of do what they typically do with the story of the old gods in Warcraft, which is they'll be taking existing characters, spells, things you know well, and twisting them. So you'll probably get to see, like, I don't know, corrupted Twilight Drake, that kind of stuff. Should be quite interesting. I'm hoping we get to see a lot of fun, like, kind of role reversals for certain characters. It's going to be launching on everything at the same time. It'll be out in April or May, and they will be running that same deal that they introduced with the Argent Tournament expansion, which allowed you to get if you pre-buy cards, you can get the 50-pack bundle for $50. So if you're a big fan of spending money on free games, there you go.
I know someone who did.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. He asked me if I downloaded the game, and I was like, no, doesn't it just automatically update? He's like, oh, no, you have to get 50 packs. And I was like, no, I have not done that yet. I have saved up gold, though. I haven't bought a new pack in a while.
Yeah, I actually haven't picked the game up since the Argent Tournament, just because, I don't know, I've been feeling a little bummed out because everyone's collections are so established. Maybe the phasing out of old cards is going to help with that. I'm really hoping that, like, the meta will break up a little bit more so that you don't have to have these three legendaries to have a competitive deck thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. But isn't it catered to two people? It's people like you who become, like, disillusioned, if you will, by people buying in, you know, so much into the game, and then other people who are new and don't have a huge collection. Isn't that who it's kind of targeting?
Yes and no. Yes, definitely it's for keeping new players, like, from feeling overwhelmed and to help people like me from getting frustrated with, like, the pay-to-win aspect of the game. However, I think the main reason they're doing it is for balance, because they want to be able to add, like, new cards that are the best version of a given ability, and there are already a lot of established super powerful cards. A good example would be, like, Annoyatron, I believe he's called, right? he's a 2-mana, 1/1 taunt divine shield.
Yep.
And he's just an incredible card, and, like, you'd never not run him in a lot of deck types. And so if they want to introduce a card similar to that, the only way to do it would be to make it, like, more powerful, basically, or else no one would ever use it. So another way to get people to use their new version of it would be to phase Annoyatron out, which is what they'll be doing.
Huh.
And I'm going to miss him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so this is kind of what we were expecting. It's kind of interesting, though. For the first time now, they've announced an expansion that I'm, like, equally kind of happy and sad to hear about, especially just because in the back of my mind all the time, I'm like, oh, like half my collection is going to be phased out by the time this comes out.
Which packs are they? They're going to keep the basic cards, right?
They're keeping basic cards and that's it. Everything else will be rotating out.
Oh, even the Grand Tournament?
Yep.
Ooh, that's not good.
Goblins versus Gnomes as well.
Yeah, I didn't buy Goblins versus Gnomes because I knew that one was.
Oh, there's so many good cards in that set. I'm really going to miss it.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? There's always the free mode or whatever, even if that does sound like not as good to me. I don't know why, but the, you know what I'm talking about, the mode where you can use everything wild card, I think they call it or something. But
I'm glad they have that because otherwise that would suck.
I'm glad they do too, but for some reason it just feels like to me it's like the second tier of the game. It's like, oh, if you're really into Hearthstone, you play the main mode. But I guess if you're like a scrub, you can play the wild card or whatever.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just me taking offense unnecessarily. We got some more Blizzard news this week. They have released two pretty important quality of life patches for Diablo 2 and Warcraft 3. Both of them are mostly designed to optimize how the game runs on newer hardware. This is an issue we actually hear about a lot where, you know, it's you have two choices when you have an aging game on a PC platform that you want to keep playable. You can either do a free patch to make sure that everyone can play it, as Blizzard has done, or you can do what I think is a little bit scummy depending on how old the game is, which is what consoles do, which is to just re-release it in HD and charge full price again for it.
Oh, is that not a good deal?
Yeah, right. Well, on PC, that's not a thing because everything releases usually with HD textures unless it's super old. But on top of that, like for example, something like The Last of Us HD would never, ever, ever have happened on PC. So I think it's just cool to see that Blizzard is keeping these games that are still being played by a lot of people alive and able to run on presumably things like Windows 10.
Yeah, because the impression I got when people were asking about it is they were like, well, why are you doing this? And they're like, it's a big player base. And I think the genesis of the question is like, yeah, you realize other people just wouldn't care, right? And I think it's cool. Like, it's they keep on updating Diablo 3 too, so it's good that they, you know, maintain their games, assuming that people are playing.
Well, yeah, it's nice for me. It's you know, I remember this coming out when I was in middle school.
Yeah, Diablo 2 is like 2000.
Yeah, I think this is one of the, like, in the top five first games I ever saw on a computer.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, I remember seeing Diablo for the first time on one of my friend's PlayStations, but my mom wouldn't let me watch it because it was too violent.
Yeah. And same thing with Warcraft. I was like, this is something that I remember looking at in, I think, seventh grade or something.
And I think Warcraft 3 in particular is a pretty big deal because Blizzard has not released an RTS like it since StarCraft 2. Don't get me wrong, it's a good game and all, but it's no Warcraft 3. And it's certainly no original StarCraft, but that's a conversation for another time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I just think that's kind of nice. I wanted to highlight it, especially because we live in an age where a lot of games just kind of fall off the radar and are unable to run on modern hardware, and you're just kind of SOL, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it, which is pretty sad when you think about it, because basically just means a whole generation is deprived of a gameplay experience. So I really like to see them bringing things up to date like that.
Yep. It's a really good throwback factor, I think.
Most definitely. Next up, we have some new details about the Street Fighter V March update that's coming. This, actually, I'm pretty excited about. It sounds like they're finally patching in some of the stuff that I would have considered, that would have made me consider buying the game. They are going to be adding in the new challenge mode, which I'm super excited about. It's going to feature demonstrations, which will have new demonstration and tutorial content that will teach you the ins and outs of Street Fighter V. It has content for every character, like specific, as well as advice geared towards players of all skill levels. It's going to have new tutorials separated into 12 lessons that will cover things from movement, normal attacks, special attacks, the V system, throws, and counterattacks to chip and recoverable damage. And then intermediate tutorials that start to get really technical with covering projectiles, invincibility frames, armor and armor break, recovery, cross-up attacks, and anti-air options. And then the advanced tutorials where it gets real crazy, where they'll be teaching you about backdashing, frame advantage and disadvantage, combo potential, and button priority. And then you're also going to have 16 character tutorials that are specific to the characters, and the new trials, which will basically there, it's a combo of the challenges, it sounds like, individual to each character that ask you to basically accomplish certain combos, and completing them can earn you some fight money, which is cool. Which, speaking of, fight money can now be used to purchase in-game content such as DLC characters and costumes, which I think is huge. I didn't realize that you could use the in-game currency for characters. That's something I don't know that we've seen in fighting games before.
The biggest issue people have is that rage quitting is still...
Yeah, and I was going to get to that, but they still have not announced a fix yet for the rage quitting issue. They have done some pretty harsh punishment to a couple of high-profile rage quitters. However, for the most part, I think that they have been mum on the issue, which is kind of a shame. That's definitely going to be something that needs to be addressed before I'm willing to drop money on it.
And how much, maybe I missed something, but how much of the story mode, or is there a story mode, or is this just not?
I haven't finished going through the improvements, but they did not sound like they're patching in a new version of the story mode in this update. I do think that they did promise to flesh it out, though, in the future.
Because, I mean, at least for Mortal Kombat, that's meaningful to me. Like, that's why I'm playing that game right now.
Well, yeah, but, I mean... You must not play much Street Fighter, though, because Street Fighter doesn't, like, Street Fighter's story is garbage.
Oh, okay.
It's, like, super bad. I mean, if John was here, he'd yell at me and say I'm wrong, but for the most part, Street Fighter has had a ridiculous story that just kind of builds on itself in a much less entertaining way. It's a lot more like shadow governments and puppet, weird puppet control and magic slash technology made up country. It's weird. I could never get into it, to be honest, even though I love the Mortal Kombat story. Street Fighter to me has always been about the gameplay. I mean, it started as an arcade game.
Yeah.
So they have added a really cool new feature, the online rematch option. So, if you lose a match and you're ticked off about it and you want to give it another shot, 'cause you know, you can beat that guy if you just had another chance, you can say, hey, let's do best two out of three. And if you both agree to it, it will start a best two out of three with that same player. I think that's an awesome feature.
Yeah, that is pretty sick.
I mean, seriously, I mean, how many times have you played a game online, like you get them all the way down, then like to almost no health, and then suddenly they just have a crazy comeback, and you're like, no, I wasn't even trying that hard at the end there. I can't let this end like this.
I wasn't ready.
Exactly. I wasn't ready, you guys. I was tying my shoe, bro, while I was holding
it. You just got lucky, bro. Let me get that again, man. Two out of three.
Precisely.
Oh, man.
Now, if only there was an option to do then 5 out of 6 and then 7 out of 8, et cetera, ad infinitum.
If I get one win, I win.
Exactly.
That's how that works.
Yeah. Let me just get one.
And they're also going to be making some improvements to the Battle Lounge. You can have up to 8 people in a lobby with match spectating, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
It's also going to be doing some bug fixes, balance changes, and tweaks. And like we mentioned earlier, still no real answer to the rage quitting issue. Hopefully we'll hear more on that. I feel like that's so important. I'm shocked that they have not had... like a solution to it yet. I mean, how hard would it be to just figure out who disconnected? God forbid that people with bad internet connections get punished for their ridiculous abuse of lag anyways.
Isn't there a way to track this, though, if it happens a lot?
It should be really easy to track if someone disconnects in the middle of a match. And as far as I'm concerned, if you disconnect in the middle of a match, it should just automatically flag you as loser, regardless of health bars or anything else. Hmm. If for any reason you are the side of the clients that disconnects first, you should just lose. There must be more to it, but I don't understand why it needs to be more complicated than that.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, you have a good point there.
Here's an interesting news, an interesting story rather, excuse me. Blizzard is bringing back the Heroes of the Dorm tournament to ESPN.
Ooh.
Yes, and they are trying to frame it much more as a March Madness for esports type thing. So... they've already started running ads on ESPNU promoting a bracket and announcing the, I believe it's the 64 qualifiers. And they are kind of pushing the same kind of like a nerdy alternative to March Madness, basically, but framing it kind of the same way that the college basketball stuff goes. And so this year we're going to be running the, or they'll be running the exact same type of tournament, and hopefully people will be a little bit more prepared, a little bit more mature. ESPN obviously has lost some super dead weight, so we don't have to worry about Cowherd anymore. So I don't know. What do you guys think about this? I'm happy to see it coming back. I would hate for the all the awful complainers and whiners to have actually pushed it completely off of ESPN.
No, I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, I think they're approaching it the right way. They're broadcasting on ESPN3, so that's obviously online broadcasting, using Twitch and YouTube as well. They seem to use like a studio show like you would have with March Madness, which I think it gives it legitimacy on ESPN. And, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's going to be less critics on, you know, about this because they understand you need an alternative to March Madness when you're ESPN and they're on CBS.
Exactly. Right? Well, and in addition to that, I feel like there's always going to be holdouts, but the more consistently they do it, the more of a history it has behind it, the less people will complain.
No, I agree. The one thing, talking about the history, I think part of March Madness is that some of these teams are established, obviously, as consistent winners, as hateable teams,
yes,
as a lovable underdog. I noticed Santa Clara is in this, so I'd be like, oh, that'd be the team I'd pull for.
Well, and that's something interesting that is kind of one of the downsides right now with a fledgling sport is that, you know, people don't really associate an esports team with a given school necessarily. This gives them the option to do that, but there's no, like, the teams don't have history that you can talk about, and there's not, like, a ton of stats available for them yet.
Exactly.
And so it complicates trying to frame it exactly the same as March Madness, because it's kind of hard to fill a bracket when there aren't a ton of stats available.
Yeah, and it's just massive speculation.
Well, and you need reputations. You need, like, certain schools that people don't like their teams. They're the underdogs.
Exactly.
That people like them. So this is something that I think over time will work itself out, and certainly the exposure, I think, will help these guys. The other issue, too, I kind of wonder about, they always talk about with college athletics, the players aren't, you know, don't get paid. Pretty much everyone else does, and it's high money. I'll be curious how they handle that with this.
As I understand it, I don't think players are getting paid, but the winners get college tuition paid. So
okay,
yeah. So I'm it's a pretty good quick solution.
Yeah, it seems fine to me. I like that it's being run through the school systems. I like that ESPN is covering it, and I like that they're getting a cool, conducive prize to the tournament they're running. I mean, I think it's neat. If someone told me that I could have possibly gotten my college tuition paid for playing a game representing my college, I would have lost my mind.
Yeah, and the other thing too is it's going to help that they have an esports section because they have more vehicles to promote it and more ways to cover it. And I think, you know, if you're willing to go to ESPN and read up on it, they'll give you kind of incentives to pull for one team or the other, or at least give you a backstory behind these guys, which I think helps.
Exactly. Next up, the Oculus Rift has released a list of its launch titles, and there's a lot. I'm just going to run down the list here, and then I'll highlight a couple that I know. A lot of these I've never heard of, but we can talk about them more once they've released and people, you know, have gotten their hands on them in VR. we've got, starting alphabetically, Adrift, Adventure Time, which is another Adventure Time game, Aeromech, Command, Albino Lullaby, Audio Arena, Project Cars. Project Cars I do know a little bit about. It's a third-person racing game, as I understand, although I'm guessing that they have first-person added in, or at least it's more first-person-centric for VR, presumably. A lot of people seem to really enjoy that game if they're into racing games. Kronos, Darknet, Dead Secret, Defense Grid 2, which I think is a tower defense, Dread Halls, Elite Dangerous, which we've talked about on the show a fair amount. That is a weird, like, people like to call it a space trucker sim, but it's basically like one of those flight sims, and you are a guy in outer space, and you can do all kinds of stuff from just transporting cargo to fighting pirates, I think, and stuff like that. I'm not really into that kind of stuff. I know John likes it. So from what I understand, though, that's going to be incredible in VR.
Yeah.
That kind of flight simulator type stuff in particular is going to benefit a lot from it.
Yeah, I actually follow that a bit.
Nice.
So it's it's definitely in a long time. They also done an update a while back for planet support. So with VR, with the entry procedure as well as being on planets with a rover, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Also, personally, I just want to see just the entering and exiting Super Cruise. That's really what I, that's all that matters to me. Like VR with that would just be amazing.
Hyperspace. Next up, we got Esper 2, Eve Valkyrie Founders Pack. That's Eve.
That's, I think, a multiplayer arena style air based multiplayer game.
Yeah. I'm not super into that one, but I'm guessing you'll have a lot to say about it.
I think it looks fancy. Is amazing. It looks really good. I haven't played it, but it looks cool.
Right.
It's just like your standard, you know, multiplayer like air shooter.
Sure.
I think.
Then we got Fly Takuma, Eve Gunjack. Is this their first-person shooter they've been talking about? I thought that got canceled. What is this? I want to look this up really quick because there's two Eve titles and I don't want to get them mixed up. Let's see here.
Arcade? Yeah.
Yep. It's an arcade shooter built specifically for VR. Cool.
Oh, it looks cool.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty interested in that. That's neat.
All I got to do is I got to save up and get it.
Yeah, seriously.
Thanks for turn.
We've also got Herobound SC. Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. This is a great game. Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes is a game where you are looking at a bomb in VR and you play it cooperatively with a friend who has a physically printed out list of super complicated instructions that are things like and your job is to defuse the bomb. So it'll be things like, okay, there's a green button with a yellow bar above it. And he'll be like, okay, what does it say? What color is the yellow bar? Or sorry, what color is the bar? And you'll say, I said it was yellow, dummy. And he'll be like, okay, one sec. I'm looking through the notes. And it'll say, if there is a yellow bar with a green button, hold the button for 3 seconds, then release it when the digit on the countdown timer is X. And it's a lot of that kind of stuff. And it's you're cutting wires that they're telling you to cut, and they're flipping through their physical manual while you've got a timer counting down in front of you. It's very tense. It's a super fun party type game. Highly recommended. It's also available for just PC. And I'm not sure if it's on console. Lucky's Tale. I think that's an adventure game. That sounds familiar, but I'm not 100% on that. Is also coming out for it. Omega Agent. Radical G. Rooms, Shuffle Pack Cantina Deluxe VR, Smashing the Bottle.
Battle.
Smashing the Battle. Vanishing of Ethan Carter. That's like a kind of adventure-ish game, I remember, but I have not actually played it. Vectron Revenge, VR Tennis Online, Pinball FX2 VR, Pinball for VR, gotta be cool, Blaze Rush, and Windlands.
I think that... VR Tennis Online is a competitive tennis game?
Indeed. Sorry, I thought... I guess the pinball one was a self-explanatory, so Charlie should have been explained both, or neither. My bad.
I just wanted to throw that out there, guys.
So that's just a rough rundown of what's going to be launching with it. You can look up the full list on many, many sites, but it's quite interesting. I recommend watching the demo video they released that shows just clips of all of the games that are launching. I'm pretty excited, although I'm not going to be an early adopter, so it's not super relevant for me. So we shall see once there's a price drop how those play. This is quite cool. So CryEngine has gone free to download, free to use. It's a pay-what-you-want style model that is going to be – it's very similar to the like Unreal Tournament 4 type model where they're going to be allowing people to – either license, use it for free, and then they get a percentage of your licensing, or you can do like a payment plan where they get a lower percentage, but you pay more per month for the right to use the software. So CryEngine is, you know, the Crytek super popular game engine, and it's now joining Lumberyard, which is Amazon's branch of CryEngine, as well as Unity and I can't remember one other of the main engines. Oh, obviously, Unreal 4, which are now all free to download and have some kind of licensing scheme involved that lets you pay what you want, essentially.
What does that mean? Like, they expect people to pay for it just because they like it, or?
No, it's for development.
Okay.
It's to build games on.
No, that makes sense. It just seems like pay what you want. Most people be like, I don't want to pay anything.
Well, then when you make a game and sell it, you have to give them a bigger percentage of your royalties.
I gotcha.
Yes. So that's how that works. And
All right. So next up, we have some details about the PlayStation VR launch, which is actually pretty cool. I'm really curious how this VR thing is going to shake out because of all the pricing differences. So PlayStation VR is coming out this October, and it's going to be $400 for the VR kit. However, it will also require the $60 PlayStation Eye to work.
So essentially what that means is all the people who are holding out, or that big sell point when PS4 came out saying that it wasn't included, well, now it's kind of a requirement if you want VR.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I'm surprised, actually. $460 is not that much less than $600. I mean, $140 is not that much when you think about it. Although, you could make the argument the PlayStation is only, what, $300 to $400, depending on when you bought it. And it's you don't need to spend another $1,200 on a gaming computer or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, because you need the 970.
That's the recommended card. You could probably run it on, like, worse on other stuff, but yeah, that's what they're building it around, supposedly. So, okay. PlayStation VR, it looks interesting. I think this is going to be quite a weird kind of situation where there's going to be a pretty clear graphical difference in terms of fidelity between the PlayStation VR and the Vive and Oculus. And I think that this will be probably most people's first experience with VR, specifically people who are big fans of Sony or who are console gamers who aren't looking to switch over to PC gaming just yet. And I think this will be the one that's adopted the most, but I don't know that it's going to give the definitive VR experience. And so I'm wondering, I don't know. I'm wondering if this is going to necessarily be a competitor for the Oculus and the Vive, or if this is just going to be an alternative to it.
That's a really good question, actually.
Or it's like a halfway house. Like you have a PlayStation and you're like, oh, this is cool. I want to actually experience it. So I'm going to go buy VR when it's cheaper. No one's probably going to buy both the Rift and
Well, the thing about it here is that VR
probably will someday.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Like, because my thing was, is depending on the situation, having a comparative, you know, having two things to compare might be a good thing. But at the same time, VR is kind of this really new cutting edge thing for us. So, you know, this most likely will be more heavily adopted by, you know, console gamers, and there's a ton of them, trust me.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be maybe easier to convince console gamers to take this plunge because they're used to buying additional hardware for their systems in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Although you are asking them to basically, I mean, when you think about it, it's kind of crazy that it costs more than the console that it runs off of. Like, it kind of boggles my mind because it means that you're spending less on the brain of the computer. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The
thing that actually does the thinking is cheaper than the thing that shows it to you.
Yeah, but at the same time, console gamers tend to go straight for the experience. I mean, that's why we have consoles. We don't have to think about it. We just put it in.
Plug and play.
Yeah, it's exactly how it works. And a lot of people, you know, I've gone through tons of forums, and it's just like, look, I don't feel like dealing with the whole computer thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using that term very loosely and lightly. So,
well, here's a question. So considering all the super favorable reviews, I don't know if you guys have seen how positively the Vive is being treated right now, but do you think it's possible that we're going to end up with a situation where the Oculus gets left out in the cold because it is this weird middleman who, like, they're missing a lot of the features that make the Vive so cool, and they're a little bit less expensive, but way more expensive than something like the PlayStation VR. Like, if you were just trying to get into VR specifically, I feel like you'd either buy the cheap one or the expensive one. Why buy the middle grade one?
Well, I feel like for the Oculus,
it doesn't. As far as I know, the Oculus doesn't have any technology. The Vive, like,
no, the Vive has.
Does not have.
Yeah. But I feel like a lot of the investors in the Oculus will probably support it to an extent. And had a pretty good
Haven't
base.
They already supported it by investing in it, though?
Yeah. But they're also getting all of the early investors are getting a full kit.
That's the early. Those were the, yes, people who paid above a certain amount on the Kickstarter. Let's keep in mind, people who Kickstart stuff are not investors, though.
Yeah.
Henry, I think you make a good point. I think the other thing here is, like, I wonder if Xbox just gets left in the dust because they don't have anything like this.
Yeah, well, they did. Well, not like this, but I don't know either, especially now that they stopped bundling the Kinect, which I figure if they do something like this, they will need something similar to the PlayStation I for motion tracking.
And I feel part of this, if I read right, I feel like Xbox basically cleaned out all their Kinect people. Like, they saw this as a failure, and I think they think perhaps VR is on the same, like, level or whatever, kind of the same deal as a Kinect. Like, at one time Wii was really cool and everyone wanted this kind of technology, and maybe they're thinking this is going to pass them by. But
sure, well, let's be clear, the reason the Kinect failed wasn't because people weren't into motion tracking technology, it's because the Kinect is a piece of trash.
Yeah, and so
that's true.
Like, people still like motion controls.
Yeah,
just depends on if they're, like, shoehorned in or if it's a natural extension. I mean, motion controls are part of VR. The Vive controller and the Oculus's upcoming released control, currently unreleased controller, are both motion controls.
Right. The Kinect, the Xbox 360's Kinect was, not only was it just poorly, it's hard to describe because I have personal experience using it and absolutely despising it. It just brings back trauma. They took game, like, they tried to kind of force feed it to you as an Xbox 360 gamer, and like, there were games that I fell in love with as a child that they made, you know, sequels to using exclusively Kinect controls, and I'm just like, the pain. You're kind of shoehorned into playing it because, you know, you're a fan of the series.
Brandon, what did you think about Steel Battalion?
Oh, stop.
You're killing him.
Oh, my heart.
I mean, I think the one that will...
I was trying not to bring that up, thank you.
I'm sorry. I knew that would
catch
you.
Oh, my gosh. Like, there's a tear coming down my eyes.
I need to save Brandon. I think the Vive probably will be, like, survive long-term. Maybe the only reason why you'd get the cheaper ones is literally you want to spend less money or you have a PlayStation. So I guess in the time being, maybe they do fine, but I think the one that lasts the longest is the best.
You know what, though? You did just bring up a pretty good point. So there's going to be people with computers that are, like, there's going to be people out there who don't have enough to afford the Vive, but also don't own a PlayStation. So that'll be who will use the Oculus, I'm guessing, for the most part.
Yeah, I agree.
But I would hate for them to be buying it simply because they're in the cold. I don't know. I think it's going to depend, too, on what games get support for what. I think that a big game maker could decide it for any of these if it's an exclusive. We're going to see a new version of the console wars to some extent here.
This is going to be crazy now that I think about it.
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, this is a whole new avenue of gaming. It's just going
to
be nuts.
The big issue I have is you have to fork over a lot of money up front for a product that down the line probably won't cost as much, and it doesn't seem like...
That's been true of new technology always.
No. That's very fair. So I guess my final point here is aside from a drift, when we looked at that list, I understood what some of these games are, virtual tennis and virtual, you know,
pinball.
Pool or whatever, pinball, that's what I meant. But there wasn't a lot that grabbed me and meant, you know, made me say, hey, I need to go out and get
in
virtual
fact,
reality.
I don't think there was anything on that list that for me, well, I mean, maybe the only thing I could say is for some people, Eve and
Elite Dangerous
will
that's,
be enough. But for someone like me, especially someone who's not into the whole third person games on VR, because it just seems strange and I'm like, why not just do it on a computer? I will be probably holding off till I see like a first person horror game and then I'll get it, because I really want to play a horror game in VR and then never finish it because I'm too scared.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of weird. Elite Dangerous cost has gone down nicely, which is good because I remember when they were developing it, the cost was...
Yeah, but we'll see. I wonder how it'll work. I wonder if you can just use your PC version or if you'll have to buy like a VR edition.
No, I think it's going to have a VR update. I know Eve has been experimenting. The multiplayer shooter Eve has been experimenting with VR as the game is developed.
Nice.
So,
that's the way to do it.
Yeah, because I remember if you look online, there's a couple of videos where they're showcasing it, and be fair, I mean, honestly, things like that really get me interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
The game pool here seems varied but limited. It's kind of like this weird kind of point because a lot of the games I really am not familiar with, except for like Eve and Elite Dangerous.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, is VR is going to be a pretty good jumping off point for a lot of new IPs, which is nice.
Yeah, so it's going to be nice to be seeing like genres reinvented.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely.
That's going to be great overall. And then, of course, we also have the – also, one thing I do like in general is we do have three products that we can choose from, which gives all three companies incentives to innovate and improve these, because that's – this is completely new, and improvement's always wanted.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Next up, there is some more Hearthstone news. The new Hearthstone hero, quote unquote, it's actually the skin for another, or an existing class, is only available to people with a recently made level 20 character in World of Warcraft. This is not new for Blizzard. They've done cross game or cross platform type synergies like this in the past. For example, I remember there was a promotion for a while where if you bought, I think it was Reaper of Souls, Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls expansion, you got Diablo unlocked for free in Heroes of the Storm. Or I have a special mount in Heroes of the Storm. He's like a battle wolf that I got for having a level 100 character in WoW. It's not unheard of for them to do this, although I'm a little annoyed because it requires that you've basically had a character hit level 20 since I think it's March 11th,
yep.
Which is super frustrating for me because I have like 6 level 100s and I would have to go in, make a new character and level them to 20 to unlock this skin.
I feel like that's kind of a moot argument for Henry though, because Henry can probably, in the time it takes me to blink 3 times.
Yeah, he could do it in the
well,
show.
to be fair, so could you guys at this point. The leveling has been so that, crunched.
And that's what someone mentioned in the comments here with this article. They're like, doesn't take very long. So
no, but it is weird. It's more gated than usual. Also, it's worth noting you can play up to level 20 in the starter edition of the game. So yeah, technically, so, you could do it for free. It's just this seems a little bit more of a commitment than usual. Although it's worth noting again, this is not a new hero. It's just like a new class. It's just a new playable portrait for an existing class.
Right, and it doesn't give you any particular powers, right?
No.
And honestly, it just seems like this is kind of what they do. I mean, in part, it creates characters and you get to see kind of different things in a different light depending on what game you play. But also, I look at these Blizzard games, like when Mortal Kombat came out or Grand Theft Auto or some of these, Halo, you saw it all over the TV screens and stuff. It seems like Blizzard kind of advertises internally and assumes that their fan base will move game to game. And
you're so kidding, right? They run massive, like, multi-million dollar ad campaigns all the time.
Really?
I never see it all over the place.
Haven't you, are you kidding me? You're telling me you don't see like you've never seen like Hearthstone commercials on YouTube or anything?
Oh, maybe it's not like, it's not aimed at me or whatever at the sports.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They do kind of do that.
They definitely market pretty heavily, but it is worth noting they are a big enough juggernaut in the industry that they don't necessarily have to.
Yeah. It does seem a little bit more. I will kind of lean toward Henry on this one because it does seem like a lot of work for a cosmetic skin for Hearthstone.
Exactly.
At the same time, you could argue that it is free and the only thing that you're spending is time.
Are they having trouble getting new people into World of Warcraft or getting people to come back to
it? World of Warcraft is at its lowest player count since Wrath of the Lich King launched like 7 years ago, I think, or 6 years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they are not doing great in terms of player count. They're really hoping that Legion, the upcoming expansion, is going to bring a lot of people back. But I think WoW is kind of, I don't think it's going to die anytime soon, but I think that it's past its prime at this point.
Yeah. So I guess maybe they're just trying to get as much as they can out of it.
Oh, that game will still be around in 10 years, I bet.
No, yeah, I think. You could say its golden age has passed, but it's a game that has aged rather gracefully in comparison to others. So.
Yeah. Next up, we have a really, really short news item. Gears of War 4 now has its own beta date. It will start on April 18th if you bought the Gears of War Ultimate Edition. For other Xbox Live members, it'll go live on April 25th.
Yay.
That's the whole story.
No, I just need to buy an Xbox.
I mean, when's the last time you guys played Gears of War?
Oh, jeez.
Maybe this is the
5 or 6 years ago?
I mean, I played 2 like 3 times through, but other than that, I maybe played 3 a little bit, and I haven't played since.
I've beaten all 3 on multiple occasions. Then that other one, the Gears of War.
Judgment.
Yeah. Oh, God, I wanted to kill that game.
Yeah, I didn't play that.
2, I think, was the only one that I really got into.
Yeah.
2 was solid.
3 was oddly emotional for me. Maybe it's because I was so invested in the first 2.
Yeah, I couldn't get into the story at all. I only played Horde mode.
Yeah, because I don't know. Maybe it's me because that game was unique to me, the Gears of War franchise in general, because that was the first game that I played where I was like, huh, I actually kind of enjoyed the competitive multiplayer in this game. And it was actually rather competitive initially in the first one.
Huh.
Like, I've been on multiple teams where I've been the last person and I just go in and save the day. Back nice. On Xbox when it first came out. So it does have a certain, you know, soft spot. Judgment kind of broke me a bit. I really did not like Judgment.
It was more fast-paced, right? It wasn't kind of...
Nobody liked Judgment. Yeah.
Judgment because it was designed... Because it basically took most of the story facets out. I mean, they tried to explain one of the characters' past. I'm not going to go into too much detail. But essentially, they kind of cut out a lot of the elements that made it good and focused more on competitive multiplayer.
Indeed. More news on that to come. And then last news story for today. I wanted to finish on this because this is pretty darn cool. There has been some chatter between. So Xbox recently put out an announcement saying, "Hey, we would like to make it so that Xbox gamers can play in the same pool online as PS4 and PC players." And they reached out to Sony, basically saying, "You know, hey, how would you feel about this?" And Sony, in their in a sort of sidesteppy way, said maybe. And I quote, "PlayStation has been supporting cross-platform play between PC on several software titles, starting with Final Fantasy XI on PS2 and PC back in 2002. We would be happy to have the conversation with any publishers or developers who are interested in cross-platform play." So they don't specifically, like, answer Microsoft. But they do try and say, like, well, we've been doing cross-platform for ages. And I want to just remind Sony that, for the most part, their cross-platform play has been trash. So I don't know why they're bringing it up.
I will say this, like, this will be the most educated thing I'll probably ever say. From a business perspective, this is, like, the most legal way for them to say it without people saying, oh, there's going to be a monopoly.
Oh, sure. What?
Because they can't directly go to Microsoft and say, hey, let's do this. They need to make an announcement, and then Microsoft will make an announcement to everybody saying, oh, you know, we would love to have this, even though they're distinctly pointing in a direction.
I suppose that's possible.
And then Sony's like, oh, yeah, sure, that would be great, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Regardless, though, this is promising that both companies are saying they're interested in cross-platform.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
I'm really hoping that we are going to reach a point where most games that are multiplayer will have full cross-platform play between PC and both consoles, specifically so that I want to see a console war start again. I want people to be like, I'm on Team Xbox, I'm on Team PlayStation. Well, let's see whose console makes us win more, you know? And I especially want to see the first-person shooter stats where PCs are just destroying every console.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like console. I mean, I love having competition. It's just that most of the time when I've seen it, it's always degraded into random jokes about people.
Sure, fair enough.
I want to see the competitiveness. Don't get me wrong.
But
I
you're just saying you're not really into competitive multiplayer.
Yeah, I love to see.
Well, the good news is you could have theoretically competitive co-op as well.
Exactly.
So
I want to see the. Yeah, I'm not a big competitive player, but I love competition. I love seeing it. It would be a nice good. It'd be nice to spectate and things of that nature. It's just. I just don't want to see it devolve into, oh, this is better. And maybe this would be good, too, because now there would be stats and players to actually back it up rather than, oh, I play on this one, so we're better. So maybe it wouldn't devolve into a complete mess like it usually does.
So I'm on board with this. The only issue I have is, Henry, didn't you say it's like a whole bunch of Russians or something on Grand Theft Auto Online? Like, it's not regional?
Yeah, that is a good point. Yeah, so you would be theoretically exposing consoles to PC hackers if you did that with competitive multiplayer. It's weird, though. It's complicated. I don't fully understand. I'm not a developer, so maybe there's ways around that. I would not be thinking about that when you hear this announcement. That's very much thinking the worst possible outcome.
Yeah, right. No, I just remember you bringing that up, and I'm thinking about Brandon. I'm like, they may be just talking trash, and we have no idea what they're saying.
Well, that's another thing, too. It's not unheard of for this to have been said before. I've heard articles like this before.
We've had games say that they will do cross-platform, but I think this is the first time that Sony and Microsoft have officially said that they would consider doing cross-platform in this manner.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. It's just that I feel like I've heard this theme so many times that I take it with a grain of salt at this point. But I do have hope. to say the least. It would be great if it does happen. I just wouldn't be surprised if it didn't.
Sure. And that pretty much does it for the news this week. However, we would like to talk about what we've been playing. I want to get things started with Tom, because he's been playing a couple things.
I know. I went out of my comfort zone here and played Clash Royale.
Yeah, casual gaming, super out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, really?
Dun, dun, dun.
I will recommend this, though. I think it is fun. It's three-minute matches. It's not
the number
long.
One game on iTunes right now and on Android. It's exploding. It's by the creators of... Clash of Clans, of course.
Yeah, I thought it was indie. I thought I was really.
Oh wow!
I'm trying to get hipster with it, and then
I'm kidding. I just went mainstream.
I played it as well. So you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it a ton, but I think it's kind of fun, like real time action.
Have you played it far enough to finish the tutorials?
Yes, I have finished the tutorials.
That's where I stopped playing because I was like, oh, it's gonna be like this, huh? Because there's like. I don't know. I immediately ran into metas and counter metas, and it's like too simple for me. It feels very pay to win.
Yeah, and I will say at the very least, they give you like a heads up. Like they don't pretend like they're not trying to get cash out of you. There is like a screen that says, look, like you can pay a lot of money in this game.
That's hilarious.
And so, yeah, I mean, at least they were kind of upfront about this. I honestly started playing it because my friends are playing it. Same crowd that plays Hearthstone. And I was like, yeah, it seems cool.
This is getting mainstream, like, nods from a lot of, like, well-known gaming critics and stuff, too. So don't feel like it's only for filthy casuals. I'm giving you the business, but
yeah,
because you were saying, like, I went outside my wheelhouse.
I was joking a little bit, too. I assumed it was pretty popular, given that the crowd I was playing with, I don't think they even have consoles. Like, they literally just play...
For crying out loud, the first couple days after it launched, they had a banner that was literally six different... units for it was six links in a row to Clash Royale on the App Store. Like it's insane how heavily they marketed it.
Sounds about right. I don't know. I recommend it if you're into games like that. And
yeah, what it is it's a competitive multiplayer tower defense.
Exactly.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yes.
Very very simple.
If you ever played Winter Mall Wars back in the day on Warcraft 3, the custom map, it's kind of like a dumbed down version of that, and I don't mean that in a bad way. So yeah, it's cool. What else have you been playing?
I played some Just Cause 2 because they brought it on.
Such a good game.
It is fun. I was playing it like one night. I was playing it late at night, and it is very stimulating. Like, I was like,
"Whoa, you made that? Yeah, that kind of." all right.
Not like that. I mean, not like that, Brandon.
Controller vibrate
Brandon.
A lot.
Hey, look. I have no opinion. You're free to do what you will with your games. That's your business.
So what is so stimulating about
it? There's just a lot going on in that game at once. Like, you're zipping around on a zip line, and you're shooting things, and there's chaos, and things blow up. And
oh, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, the primary resource is called chaos.
Yeah, so I was like, damn, man, I'm trying to fall asleep.
Yeah, that's... Why are you playing video games while trying to fall asleep? How does that even work?
That
sounds like the opposite of trying to fall
asleep.
That's
called being counterintuitive.
Yeah,
right?
No, I mean, this is entirely a me problem.
Well, that explains why you were so stimulated.
Yeah.
It's like you were vulnerable, and then Just Cause 2 came in and got in there and just did the business.
It is. I'll recommend it for anyone who's wants backward compatibility with your Xbox. And
yep, backwards compatibility.
It's really a great game. I highly recommend it. I think it's better than the third one, honestly.
Yeah, actually, the content in Just Cause 2, as well, I agree with Henry's. Just
the pacing
phenomenal.
And story are a little weak in 2, but the gameplay and like weapon variety and stuff is just so amazing.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, it's a game that's going to age gracefully.
Yeah.
I played some games this week, you guys.
Ooh, what did you play, Henry?
Well, speaking of Just Cause, I finally broke down and got Skyfortress.
Oh, you.
Yes, the first DLC for Just Cause 3. And let me tell you, it's very stimulating.
Yeah.
I got the jetpack. It is freaking
ooh.
Awesome.
Mm.
I went to the Skyfortress.
Uh-oh.
Cleared it in 20 minutes. And I don't regret it. Let's see. I bought the DLC through Green Man Gaming again. I had another 20% discount code, so I got it for like $9, which is the absolute most you should pay for such a short DLC. However, I think it's worth it for the jetpack. The jetpack is incredible.
Yep. I would like to say it is short, but the gameplay mechanics that are brung into it via the DLC make it awesome.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I don't have a ton to say about it. It's a 1 or 2 hours. It adds one new gun. It adds your jetpack, which has rockets and a machine gun on it. And I think it adds a vehicle, but I think... No, that would be the jetpack. So I think that's it. Oh, and it adds a little bit of a new landmass up in the sky. So wait for it to go on sale. Grab it. Definitely worth it for the jetpack if it's cheap. Brandon, what have you been playing this week?
I've been playing... I'm still finishing up Tomb Raider. I got to the DLC. It's kind of funny because I feel like that's a little bit more interesting than the story for me. I say that because I'm just tired of the whole, oh, eternal life. You know, it's like your standard like adventure tale. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's a good story, just twists and turns. I'm just, I feel like I've heard it so many times in movies and things.
Sure.
But it's still good. It still looks great. And we're starting to get to a crutch point there. I got a double barrel shotgun, and that's just exceptionally satisfying. I think that's really what it comes down to. Other games I've been playing, more of the Division. I'm starting to, you know, come up with leveling techniques as well as solo play options.
Yeah, mostly because I'm under the weather now, and I was under the weather last week, and I haven't been able to do much voice chat.
Yeah, just in case you guys are wondering, I'm level 14. I'm in process of clearing the left side of the map. If anybody has the game and knows what I'm talking about.
Single player is a little slow in this game.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've learned. When playing The Division, single player, you have to reset your character in a completely different way. So you have to change your skills out. You need to change your weapons out because you're not playing with the support of another player. And if you do it correctly, the game actually becomes, you know, a little bit more approachable and faster paced. But at the same time, it's just kind of like a completely different avenue of playing. And it takes patience and time because you have to flesh out how you play rather than just fitting a role when you're in a group.
Definitely.
Aside from that, the only other thing I could say is I've been having this urge lately. And
geez, this is going to be awesome. He's going to show us all something on this audio medium podcast.
No, the reason why is because I forgot the name off the top of my head.
No, he's just going to hold it up to the microphone so you can all see it.
All right, let me just do that right now.
All right, you guys turn it around so they can see the back.
Yep, and just to let you guys know, for all you guys who are burning with anticipation, I just bought Blazing Angels, Scorpions of World War II. I just kind of fell in love with this game. Simply because it was just something I played in high school. It came out in like 2006.
I had never heard of it. You said it's like a World War II flight sim?
Yeah, it's like a World War II flight arcade sim. I mean, it's, you know, there's no cockpit view and, you know, there's no like active, you know, systems for simulation. It's just, hey, let's fly around and blow stuff up.
Oh, God, yeah, I hear you.
Interesting. Be quiet. It's just
flight simulators, quiet, man. Henry. That stuff's riveting.
But recently, I've been having, like, this urge to play some of the older games I played when I was much younger.
Definitely. I know what you mean.
Yeah, so, like this, I don't know, like a launch title for Xbox, Bloodwake, which is a boat. It's like an arcade boat shooter.
So you're going to weigh in on how well it's aged next week?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a PS3 title, so it's not going to look too bad.
Well, there's more to a game aging than just graphics. Yeah. Outdated gameplay types, like old storytelling tropes. You know, there's a lot of stuff that can go into it.
Yeah, so it's gonna be interesting. That's basically it on my end. So
nice. Tom,
is the DLC? Sorry, because I am playing through Tomb Raider. Is the DLC like a must-have, or is that just if you want?
It's
like,
called Tomb Raider. The game is called Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider.
That's true.
And the DLC is Tomb. So
nice.
There you go.
I feel like that's a critical part of that game.
Because the one thing that Tomb Raider is never going to have enough of until they go back to like the 2 system, where the whole dang game is basically a tomb or a series of tombs, where you just go to one tomb to another tomb and you fight like 5 people because you're just too busy tomb raiding.
Yeah.
There's never going to be enough tombs in Tomb Raider. That's just how it works.
I like it.
Cool.
So dish out the $10. I mean.
Okay.
Also dish out another $10 for that challenge mode. It's pretty cool.
I also played one more game this week that I'm pretty excited to just tell you guys that I played Far Cry Primal. I got it for my birthday, and I love that game, and I don't know why everyone is such a hater.
Really?
The story is kind of boring, but whatever. The setting is amazing. It's gorgeous. 10,000 BC. The weapon variety is huge. Even though people say there's only four weapons, they're all fully upgradable, among many, many other things. I can ride a saber-toothed tiger into combat while clubbing dudes left and right. I don't know. That game is great, dumb, fun, and I don't know why people don't like it more.
I hear the map's based off of Far Cry 4. I'm messing. I'm having fun. So you think it's worth full $60, like if you had to pay for it?
I got it for my birthday. I'd pay 40 for it.
40? Okay, because I was thinking it was like the 30-40 range.
Just to be clear, I've seen some really good gameplay recently of that game, and holy crap, it's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something about, you know, being a, I guess, a human or the closest thing to a Neanderthal that we can get, and climbing, well, first of all, taming a saber-toothed tiger.
I like that. That's
and then
cool.
feeding it and then petting it and then telling it to go kill a woolly mammoth, which
that
it
is
actually
cool.
does.
That's cool.
It's not like, oh, I'm going to point at you and tell you to kill it. No, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. Think about that for a minute. It's not saying, especially if you see the beginning of the game, I'm sure we've seen playthroughs where like the woolly mammoth is basically like all that work you did to kill the first one. And then, you know, a saber-tooth just comes and just says, nope.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And this one now, you just kind of like point a finger and like, bam.
What helps you progress through the game, though? Is there enough of a story or, like, just progression?
I mean, the story will help you progress, but as Henry said, the weapons are actually worth... And the weapon system in that game is a lot more fleshed out than a lot of people are letting on. It's not like Far Cry 4, where, you know, oh, we have, like, 14, you know, different projectile... You know, we have all these projectile-based weapons. Yeah, sure. Like, it's, you know, caveman, you know, so there's no guns.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you get different types of bows that have upgrades so you can use them. So, you know, you have a long bow and a short bow. Okay, that makes sense.
And a double bow. Also, you have a sling. Also, you have throwing knives. Also, you have throwing knives that turn people crazy. Also, you have bee bombs as well as fire grenades. I mean, you have a lot, even, and that's just the range. Oh, and you can throw your spears, and you can throw your club too. Actually,
yep. And then each of the animals that you, as you are a beastmaster.
Oh, it's so cool.
So not only do you get to, that you can tame multiple animals in the game. I think maybe is it all of them, Henry, or is it just multiple?
I think everything except for mammoths and rhinos.
Is there hunting or like skinning?
Yep.
Like,
yep. Well, it's still a Far Cry game, so let's not forget it.
There's
about
more
that.
Of it than in any one before that. And so there's a lot of collection. For someone like me who loves Far Cry, loves sandbox games, and doesn't mind collecting a lot of resources and kind of managing them, I've had a blast. I mean...
This is informative to me because I was kind of down on it, and now I'm like, yeah, I probably will pick it up.
Wait for it to be $40.
Yeah.
Spend it, and then take your time playing the game.
Yeah.
That's my recommendation.
The thing about it is all the Far Cry games have been comparable in their own right. I mean, there's been some high points and low points, I guess you could say, but they're all, I believe, good games, and Far Cry Primal doesn't really disappoint in that.
No, but I should be clear, it is certainly, there's a reason it wasn't given a numeral.
Right.
Like, there's a reason that it is kind of a branch. It probably should have been $40. All that said, though, it's still a good game. I've had a lot of fun with it so far, and I'm going to go back to it tonight. So,
well, do you think it lives up to the Far Cry name then?
I mean, yes. I don't really consider Far Cry to necessarily be making promises based on their name, though, when you consider that Far Cry 1 is a sci-fi, like, alien story. Far Cry 2 is, like, war-torn Africa with malaria. Far Cry 3 is, like, some white kid who's, like, partying on an island full of pirates.
Hey, I've been
there. Far Cry 4 is, like, rediscovering your, like, the history of your culture. Yeah, and then this one is Far Cry Blood Dragon was
amazing.
Like neon 80s dragons
amazing.
Action movies, and then now Primal is 10,000 BCE. So I don't really think that Far Cry makes a promise with its name outside of we're going to make an interesting open world game.
No, they have a quote where they're like, we just don't want you to guess what the next game is, basically.
Like, yeah. I'm sure they have like a pun in office that's like, oh, each game is a far cry from the last one.
Hey, yo, what do you think's next? Do you guys want to guess like where they would go next?
I'm going to say... 5.
Hey, that's not fair. I'm talking about setting. I'm talking about age. I'm talking
well,
about.
Judging from that,
we'll
last,
use the Far Cry 4
judging
map.
Judging from that list, I'm just not even going to bother.
I want something just whack. Like I want Undersea with those lamplight fish. That is the one game I want that's never came out.
What?
You know how if you go deep enough in the sea, those fish have lamplights in front of their head?
Yeah.
I want to go that far underneath the sea and hunt those things.
Play Soma.
Oh, no, that stuff's sketch.
Dog, there's no game that's going to have those fish that is not sketch. Are you joking?
I want to not.
For the record, Henry hates being underwater in video games.
No, wait.
Don't remind me.
So you're not interested in the VR game that's underwater?
I'm not interested in being trapped in a medium that games make it pointlessly hard to move through with something that can one-shot me almost inevitably.
That is absolutely what
you've
that
just
game is.
I've just noticed the most hilarious thing ever. Henry's only hydrophobic in video games.
Yes.
That is interesting.
I actually love to swim in real life, but I
yeah, isn't that crazy?
Cannot stand. It's because of Shadows of the Empire, the sewer level. There's a level of Shadows of the Empire for N64 that you're like fighting your way through like a sewer system on a space station, I think, and there are like horrible tentacle monsters in the water, and they just come up and just destroy you.
Oh, I want an HD version of that on my console.
You could not make that game HD. You could not. I mean, I guess maybe, but that game is like, that game looked awful when it came out.
Oh, it did its job because now you're hydrophobic in video games.
Yeah, thanks, game.
I played Mortal Kombat XL. Please play that. It's good. Thank you, Brandon, for recommending that. Solid stuff. I was continuing the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah. In case you're wondering, we all just kind of glanced over it. Just kind of gave him that look like, really?
I was getting hydrophobic too, and I'm claustrophobic now. This is not good. Talk, Henry.
Hello. So I think that pretty much wraps up what we've been playing this week. And that's going to do it for this week's episode. As always, this has been procedurally generated, but we hope you've enjoyed listening to the show. Be sure to check us out on Audioboom and iTunes to leave a rating or review. You can also follow us on Twitter at @PG_show. Thanks, and as always, game on.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.